This show is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky things that are best enjoyed after you see the movie. So any movie we talk about, we recommend you go see. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
Horror. You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Horror.
Alive, it's alive.
Groovy.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Oh the Horror, a horror podcast where we take a look at classic and modern horror films, and we just talk about them
from two enthusiasts' point of view. So today we've got one that has been pushed by quite a few of our listeners, actually, mm-hmm. and I'm one that I'm a huge fan of, and like I keep forgetting how huge of a fan I am of this movie.
Yeah, no, it's a really solid film all in all. So 2007's The Orphanage.
Yes, directed by A.J. Boyana.
J.A. Boyana.
Excuse me, as I'm looking at this IMDb page. Written by Sergio Sanchez.
So everybody thinks this movie is a Guillermo del Toro film. Everyone that I talk to is like, yeah, that one he directed. Yeah, he directed that film. I'm like, nah, man, he was a producer. But it's definitely not his film.
Right, and we were saying before, like, this is one of those instances where a movie is kind of on brand with a certain director that people would just assume that it is.
Yeah, like an Eli Roth presents or a Tim Burton presents type situation.
Yes, because Tim Burton did not direct Nightmare Before Christmas.
Henry Selick did.
I will always review that fact. So Guillermo del Toro produced this film, and it shares a lot of sentiment with his movies, but I like the fact that it actually doesn't, because Guillermo he makes movies that are kind of very fantastical and crazy and wild.
Devil's Backbone,
Pan's Labyrinth, very sort of Peak, iconic looking type of movies. Mm-hmm. This one is sort of restrained in the way that it looks like a Guillermo del Toro movie.
It's very
subdued,
and I think that's actually what works really well for it. It's not trying to be more than it is.
Right.
I think maybe in the marketing it tried to be a little more than it was, but I think that was a pleasant surprise for people who aren't necessarily horror fans.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, it is a horror film, but it's more of a drama mystery than anything else.
Yeah, it's kind of akin to almost a Steven Spielberg, Stephen King-y sort of a story.
Right.
Where it's, you know, it's about ghosts and murder and intrigue. And it's a bit of a thriller in a way, but it has a lot of good horror elements that are, I wouldn't say baseline.
No, not baseline, but you could...
The skeleton is there.
Yeah, I mean, you could... Films that kind of exist in that same sub-genre would be like The Others or The Sixth Sense. I think this is better than both of those.
Yes, for sure.
There's more layers to this. Mm-hmm. And subtle layers to this film.
But to summarize what's going on here, a woman brings her family back to her childhood home, which used to be an orphanage, mm-hmm. and her son begins to speak with this invisible entity in the house.
Yes.
And then a sort of unraveling mystery sort of unfolds from there. And when we mentioned the base elements of a horror story, I feel like any other director, like a director that was more concerned about horror films, would have turned this into something more, I guess, maybe gory or gaudy or on-the-nose horror. Like, you could have easily made this like a haunted house movie.
Right.
You could have easily made this into something that was basic and simple.
Tons of jump scares and stuff like that, which, while there are a few in this, I think they're all justified.
Yes,
and there
are
a couple of really horrifying moments, especially in the middle of the film.
Yeah, the knock on the door sequence. That
knock
was
on the door
great.
Sequence. The woman getting hit by the ambulance and her face just being completely caved in. But that like moment where she just grabs Laura's wrist.
Right. Yeah.
That's very Hitchcockian. Like having that mid moment jump scare before we end up with this final reveal at the end, which was very interesting. So, yeah, let's delve into the story a bit. So, Laura, the main character of this film, grew up in an orphanage and was adopted. So we see her playing with a bunch of the other kids right away. She gets adopted, and then it cuts to 30 years later. She is now taken over this orphanage, and her son, who's actually her adopted son, Simon has HIV. He doesn't know that he's been adopted. So she's bringing in she wants to get like 5 or 6 kids who are sick just to help them and take care of them, just because that's like her family now.
Right. She's very much noble in that respect. She wants to take right. on and help kids because she herself was an orphan, mm-hmm. and she wants to do right by that. It's very we establish who our heroine is absolutely. Very quickly.
Now, Simon has a bunch of imaginary friends, and he says that they're kids who, you know, he's talking to. And what we start to understand in this film is that we're kind of like, all right, does Simon actually see these kids? Does Simon not? Like, what's going on? Well, one day they go down to the beach, and Simon ends up seeing another kid named Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where this other woman, this older woman, just kind of like shows up at the house. She's a social worker, and she then wants to deal with Simon's case, especially because he is a kid who has HIV, and she wants to make sure he's getting the right treatment. But this woman just kind of like appears out of nowhere, and you're like, who the hell is this woman? She seems very strange. And what we start learning throughout this film, like, then all of a sudden, you know, there's a party for Simon. He finds out that he's adopted. He freaks out. He says Thomas told him that he was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like revealing all these secrets. And then before we can really get to anything crazy, this kid with this mask shows up at this party.
Right.
And ends up like slamming a door onto Laura's hand in the bathroom.
Sort of Dennis the Menacing his way into their life.
In a really twisted, dark way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at this point, we're kind of like, all right, what the hell is going on? I remember the first time I saw this, I was extremely confused about like, all right, so is this kid actually like a ghost coming back or what's going on? Anyway, the woman falls into the bathroom. All of a sudden, Simon's gone. She can't find him.
Mm-hmm.
So she's looking around the party everywhere. She's trying to find the kid. You know, she's searching everywhere. She's moving everything in the house. And then it jumps to 6 months later,
right? And it's a very interesting way to get through all of that, because normally in movies like this, you would want to follow that moment and things would just keep getting escalating from there, because that's how
right.
our brains think that like movies like this can be mm-hmm. paced. But again and again, this movie kind of like subverts your expectations as to how the story's going to unfold. Time wise,
right,
in a weird way, because like not to say that it's more realistic or practical in that sense, but it's something that would be left in the back of this character's mind only to come up again,
right?
And I like that. It's yeah. it's a bit more bold. It's understated.
Yeah,
it doesn't kind of wind up tension a bit too much, because because this movie keeps taking its time in order for big payoffs to happen. It knows yeah. when to take its time, and it knows when to use horror and spook elements sparingly.
It very subtly puts through the breadcrumbs of this film, like to kind of lead you on this path, because when you rewatch it, you start piecing some stuff together. So that night before it jumps to 6 months later, you know, she's looked around for Simon everywhere. Can't find him. There's these very like ghostly elements that are happening. She feels like someone's in the same bed as her, or she feels like, that's later on, but she feels like there's something going on in the house, and she hears this just massive bang noise. Mm-hmm. She's moving with her wheelchair because she's hurt her leg and everything. And it makes it seem like this house is completely haunted. Little do we know that has massive significance for later in the film.
Right.
So we jump 6 months into the future. You know, she's still looking for Simon. And we've seen like the old woman come over to the house, and she was in kind of like the coal shed area or something like that, like
yeah.
digging around. And she finds her with a shovel, and it's kind of a comedic moment, because watching this old woman try to run away from this coal area was just ridiculous.
Because
like
again,
she's hobbling away like she's going to escape, and she does.
Right. And I think that sort of midway point of the movie is actually kind of where the movie stumbles, because you're not exactly quite sure what you're watching. Yeah. You're not really aware of like why you're being shown this.
Right.
And it's not until near the end where it does, because where most mystery movies, like, it would make it all seem important or at least interweave into there. And I think that's where it stumbles just a tad.
A little bit.
Once we get past the halfway point and that scene, I'm fully invested in everything that happens because it's mesmerizing up until the very end.
Right, because, I mean, we hit the six-month point. She ends up going into town, seeing the woman. The woman gets hit by the ambulance or whatever.
And a horrific jump scare.
Really insane jump scare, because you're wondering how badly this woman is damaged. Briefly, you see that her face and jaw have been ripped away, kind of, and it's caved in. And then you think she's dead. Yeah, she grabs Laura's wrist when she touches the whistle, which was the same whistle that this Thomas character had and was, like, blowing repeatedly. So she's like, huh, there's a significance. She sees the doll of Thomas. And then we start finding out exactly who this woman is after her death, right? Because she does this jump scare. The sheet pulls away, and we just see fully missing, tongue waggling. It's with all the tension and everything that happens in it. It definitely deserves that rating, I think, more so.
But for an R-rated film, I think this is probably the most outright violent or gory this movie even really gets, because it's not that violent.
That and the crushed nail and her pulling her fingernail off.
But again, like, in the hands of somebody else, I feel like you'd have ample opportunities to do far more like brutal stuff with this. But again, it's to its benefit that it's not.
Yeah, and the reason this film is R is because it deals with the death of a lot of children. That's definitely like a major part of this film. So what we find out is that Thomas was the son of the older woman who had actually worked very briefly at the orphanage, and they kept the kid away for a while. Well, what happened was a few weeks after Laura was adopted, the kids were like playing with Thomas, and what happened was they ended up taking his like mask, the sack that he wore off, because he was born with a bunch of deformities. Like, you see him briefly in there, and his face is pretty mangled up. So the mother kept him hidden away, not to play with the other kids. Well, he wanted to. He was just a kid wanting to be accepted. So he went and played with the kids, and they took his mask, I think, and then he ends up, like, getting upset and running off and hiding, and ends up in this cave area where he's first found by Simon and drowns because the tide comes up and he ends up dying.
Yeah.
They consider it to be an accident, but the mother's not having it, so she ends up poisoning all of the kids.
Yeah.
And then burying them in the coal shaft area. Mm-hmm.
And this is all revealed to us in a very clever and interesting way, where it's flowed through like almost a hallucination sequence. Because, again, it's not really well established. It's like, okay, are these ghosts real, or is this kind of just like in her head a bit, and she's just remembering it because she was traumatized by this as well. It rides a very fine thin line, kind of up until the very end again. But then we get into the I like to call it like the sort of conjuring sequence.
I mean, there's definitely, because, you know, that she brings somebody in to kind of
assess the house, like, you could say,
exactly,
for spookies.
And that's where, you know, the reveal that these spirits are there, they are of the dead children, and they, you know, they never left. Like, this is the place they died, this is the place they haunt until they are taken care of, basically. They need someone to watch over them. So basically what ends up happening in this film, and what's really just keeps this film so dark, is, so we find out that noise during the night that Laura heard on night one was Simon. He had found a secret passage that takes him down into like a basement area. And what had happened was he went down there, and when she was looking for him that day, she ended up moving the scaffolding in front of it by accident. And it caused it so he couldn't get out. So he kept trying to get out, slipped, fell, and broke his neck. So that big bang that we hear right in the beginning, or like the kind of the midpoint of the film when he disappears, is him falling and snapping his neck. That reveal drives her completely over the edge.
Right.
So At this point, Carlos, who is her husband,
yeah,
he ends up he's done at this because of everything that's going on. He can't really handle it anymore.
And he kind of offers the ultimatum to her. She's like, "We need to get out of here. We need to let this be, and we need to go home, and we need to start to rebuild our lives from after this." And she's like, "No, I need to stay, and we need to figure out what happens."
Yeah,
because she is rightfully so tied to this place.
Oh, it's completely consumed her. I mean, she even mentions like she can't sleep through the night anymore. Like she keeps. And these ghosts seem to be reaching out to her and not him. Right. Like, there is this bond and this connection.
And she's very well motivated because of her history there. And she feels, again, dutiful to finish this.
Right. I mean, that's exactly why she's even back there, is to take care of children in the way that she was taken care of, to help them, you know, foster a good relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
And help get them actually fostered, which would be, you know, that's the main goal.
Yeah.
So the reveal of that, she ends up taking a bunch of pills and in the end dies. But during this time when she takes the pills, she sees Simon. She sees all of the other kids who she spent her youth with up until she was adopted. And Simon wants her to stay there and take care of them.
Right.
To be the Wendy to, you know, these kids. Because we talk about Peter Pan a lot and never growing old. And that's something like... that Simon even brings up in the beginning, is that these kids, like, he knows that he's going to die. He was told by Tomas that he was going to die. And he seems completely okay with that in the beginning of the film.
Yeah, at peace with it, I guess you could say.
Completely at peace. And he even talks about how the kids, they can never grow old either. They're like this forever.
I've always been fascinated at when... you can call it a bit of like a... macabre Twilight Zone-y sort of ending, but as to the sort of automaton like response to this place where like you're just kind of where this character is sort of hypnotized into staying when anybody else would have easily rejected this and just fucked off with their husband. And what makes a movie great is when you can understand why that character stayed and why she just kind of fell down that path, and you as an audience accept it.
Yeah.
And as we sort of got to from her deciding to stay to her inevitably dying, it got to me like, this is the part where the gratuitous horror movie could have happened.
Right.
Because you kind of get a sequence of her attempting to conjure these ghosts to talk to them. To find them, she sets everything up in a very creepy sort of like placing the tables for the kids.
She switches it back to
dresses
30 years
up like
earlier.
A handmaid from the orphanage and like starts to play games with herself and in hopes to like invite the kids there.
Right,
and she feels like she is going crazy because nothing is working. Where we already know she's already gone crazy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
She's been driven crazy by even wanting to do this.
Yeah.
And when it starts to work, it doesn't matter at that point if it's real or not. And that's kind of where the movie just keeps its claws in me.
Right.
Because at that point, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what is the scariest part, because it could just have all been in her head. And that's what just drove her over the edge.
I mean, to me, this isn't really even... I don't consider this really that scary of a film at all. I consider it more of just a heartbreaking drama, more than anything. Because, I mean, it has supernatural elements to it. But it's really... It's a mystery that is being unfolded at the same time. You're watching her as a caregiver... doing literally everything she can to find out what the mystery is by taking care of these ghosts in a way, by wanting them to give her the answers that she needs. Like,
and it's at almost every turn, this movie is just about to reach the precipice of going full on, like, again, horror. Like,
yeah,
it goes right up to that line, and then it kind of dials back each time, and it it's a great way of kind of releasing that tension, because you kind of want this movie, because I feel like, again, we keep thinking that Guillermo del Toro made this, or the people that do think that. If he had made this, he would have cut loose, like, well into the midway point of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, this would have gotten crazy.
I mean, to me, this feels more like Devil's Backbone than anything. So that's where I think there is some confusion on people thinking he directed it.
Mm-hmm.
But usually he amps it up with a couple of extra moments that kind of take it into that more horror realm.
Right. Or some sort of fantastical element more so than what this movie's given. But this, again, is a bit more understated and subdued. Well enough to not be him.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's kind of that part that I really like.
Yeah.
Because again, we can expect something like that from Guillermo del Toro, or probably from any director, but the restraint that this director had to kind of toe the line and making sure that it didn't get too out there until it needed to.
Right.
I think very commendable.
Yeah. And he doesn't try to treat the audience like idiots.
No, absolutely not.
Very, very subtle stuff, like especially with her searching around and blocking off that door. Like, you don't even realize what was going on when that happened until it's revealed later. You're like, oh, wow, that was really subtle. You just barely threw that in there, you know?
Worth multiple viewings because of the things that it's just like, it will not even, like, make a MacGuffin. Like, out of, like, it won't even do a pump fake into making something look important when it's not.
Right.
It will just show everything that needs to happen, and you'll be like, all right, I guess that's just the thing. And you're probably going to miss one or two things that were important. I know I did.
Yeah.
Like, the significance of when we heard that bang of the child snapping his neck to that door, it completely went over my head.
Yeah, and I mean that's kind of the point. It's so subtle, and you're on her perspective of things.
Sure.
So you're not seeing it through the lens of, like, the viewer. You know, you don't know everything. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a good thing. Sometimes, you know, having stuff not directly shown to you right away.
Right.
And be like, oh, okay, we know what's going to happen, but she'll figure it out eventually. It's like, you're right on that ride.
You're right on pace
her.
With her. And there isn't, like, the equivalent of a info dump in order to bring you up to speed with what is confusing, because you're just as confused as her come the end of it.
Well, that was supposed to... I think this film was originally going to get remade in the U.S., like, I'm pretty sure right after it came out and did really well, they were like, we're going to do an American remake. But it would completely lose all of its subtleties.
Right. And it
just doesn't make sense.
Not that there's any sort of innate, like, Spanish sentiment that is in this movie that needed to be preserved or anything. But again, you see how a movie like this can be made, and how a movie like this should be made. And this is the exact type of way that a movie like this should have been made.
Yeah.
Because we see too often where this can easily just become generic, by the numbers type of... I could easily see a PG-13-ified version of this that's just edgy and
easily.
Jump scary and spooky, and it's just, it would be too easy to do. And this is a cut above that stuff, and should be taken as such. I love this movie. It's something that I always kind of go back to when, of the few kind of horror movies that I could recommend that I know people haven't seen, it's this, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people that I know who have seen this, people either really like it or they don't. And there are some people who will argue that it teases on horror, but doesn't fully go 100% there.
Or anything.
That's kind of the American sensibility of horror, is that it needs to be
super
scary and terrifying, but... Mm-hmm. It's a ghostly fairy tale. Type of film this is. It's not meant to be... It's meant to kind of be haunting and really kind of like, wow, that's extremely messed up. And
it's not meant to terrorize.
That's the
it's
horror
not
of the situation.
To,
yeah.
You're not supposed to be on the edge of your seat all the time about what's going to come pop out at you or what horrific thing you're going to see next. And there's a great line to be towed for... dramatic way, because again, all of this great, like, there's great scene work, there's great characters in all of this, Every motivation is very well pronounced, and you understand where everybody's coming from, or why people believe what they do believe, and why they are skeptical about the things that are shown to them. People forget that you can still make a good movie out of stuff like this, and The Orphanage to me nails it. It hits it right on the head, and it's a very poetic and poignant sort of tale for a story like this.
Yeah. A little trivia here. So her necklace, which is a St. Anthony medallion, he was the patron saint of lost items. So it makes a lot of sense with, you know, especially in the beginning with the whole, the little treasure type hunt that they do in the beginning. Yeah. And plus the fact that she has lost.
It's and you also mentioned that the script was originally from the 90s. And
yeah.
You see the amount of writers that it had, which are several. It was apparently championed by the director.
It just said one writer. It was Sergio Sanchez was the only... He was the guy who did the screenplay for it.
Yeah, you're right.
And this was... Yeah, he did this in the 90s. The director really liked it a lot and wanted to develop it. But in order to get it the proper budget and the proper production time, worked with Guillermo del Toro in order to make that possible. Because bringing him on as a producer... definitely upped the ante as far as like what he was able to do. This is a gorgeous film, by the way.
It is.
Like,
it really,
so
really
well
is.
Shot.
And I was very surprised at the level of beauty that we can just be seen, like with all of those beach shots and inside the cave and like those grand shots of the house. Mm. Like you see where the money can go, but again, the sort of where other movies would have gone into, again, like either effects or high budget, over the top sequences, this just kind of put all of the money on the screen in a very like matter of fact way.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows. Like, I think a cheaper movie would have just kind of been by the numbers and not sold the story well. But again, this movie is gorgeous when it wants to be.
Yeah, it's giving the time. So the problem that we run into with a lot of films, and what was great about this, is that the production time was, you know, they were given the time to actually put it together without feeling overly rushed. And you can tell that there was definitely time given as far as some of the setup shots.
Yeah.
The way, especially the set dressing for the house or the orphanage in itself and everything, like... it has a timeless feel to it.
Mm-hmm. It does.
You kind of don't really know when it's... You know it's modern, in mm-hmm. modern day, but then you know that there's the 30 years earlier time. But then it crosses those lines, especially when she starts decorating the place how it used to look and dressing on how
right,
it used to
yeah.
be. And even that 30 years ago has this much older kind of feel to it.
Right.
But you can't really place it.
And I find more and more now that a movie even made as far back as 2007, if it was at any point modern in what it was showing, it's still pretty dated from what I can see. And this movie doesn't really date itself at all.
No.
Even from like down to what the characters are wearing.
Well,
like,
I think that's because of the fact that it's a Spanish film and it's done in, you know, it's done over in Europe. Like if this were done in America, they would you would be able to see the cultural influences right away.
Mm-hmm.
No matter
and that's not
what.
To say that it's you know, culturally subdued, because it's not
like at all.
Prevailing sort of architecture or sentiment that we're missing,
right.
But it's just it's very nebulous where it's set and supposed to be.
And where you visit, when you visit different parts of the country as well, like when they go into the town and stuff, it has an old school feel to the town. Like that's the difference between movies filmed overseas and in America, is America, it's a very young country in comparison to all of these other countries
yes.
that have been around
hundreds
of years,
thousands of years
longer. Yeah, I mean, that's why this film is so special and has that timeless moment to it, or timeless feel to it, and why people revere it so highly. I mean, it's an expertly crafted ghost story, fairy tale fantasy in a way that... I mean, it almost seems like a really twisted bedtime story.
Yeah, and again, I think that's exactly what it should be.
Yeah.
We can easily put it... I could easily put it up there with something like a Pan's Labyrinth or like a sort of macabre fairy tale that Guillermo del Toro is akin to.
Yeah.
which I think is exactly why he was attracted enough to produce this film.
But it was right on the heels of the success of Pan's Labyrinth.
Absolutely, yeah. And I want movies like this to kind of go forward more. Yeah. Because, like, to take at least take after Guillermo del Toro more. And I know this director has done at least one more movie since he's done that, which is A Monster Calls, and apparently wasn't that good. But God bless them for keeping for constantly trying.
Well, it's cool because he gets to do Jurassic World 2 next. So he's crossed the threshold into the Hollywood.
He'll do better than whatever the hell
Colin Trevorrow?
Yeah, Trevorrow did.
I thought Jurassic World was fine.
Eh.
I mean, is it way too much CG for a film? Yes,
yeah,
of course.
Yes, but it is.
Is it better than The Lost World and Jurassic Park 3? Yes.
Well, everything's better than The Lost World and Jurassic Park 3.
You know
3.
What?
That's a low bar.
Yeah, because you go back to the original island, but that's beside the point. The point is...
Anyway, yes.
I hope he does a good job with it.
Yeah, and I love restraint in movies, and especially when restraint leads to subverting expectations, and that's kind of what this movie's about.
Yeah.
Because you think that it's just going to go exactly where you think it is every time, and it's not. And it's not twisty, it's not windy, it's just you're seeing something that you know you haven't seen before.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing where they're not slamming everything into your face. You actually have to pay attention. And
right, like an adult.
Yeah, and it's the clues sometimes are very subtle. Like even with their treasure hunt in the beginning, very subtle clues throughout. Follow the breadcrumbs, kind of like when he takes the stones on his way home so that Tomas can come back to the house, come back to the orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that was a really cool moment, too, because the ghost of the kid has been trapped in the cave for so long.
Yeah.
And then he actually brings him back. So it was kind of like reuniting all of the kids who were killed along with...
Right, yeah.
Tomas, so they can all finally be together, mm-hmm. and it's not this terrible. I mean, the fact that like this woman ended up killing all these kids because she was upset at the fact that her son was killed. Like, great, I get that there's grief, but you didn't need to poison like a bunch
right,
of
and
kids.
that's just the absurd amount of grief.
But that's where that's where the layers are in this
right,
thing, too,
yeah,
because you think it could just be about this one kid, and you're like, all right, but no, it's about all these other kids who ended up dying in the process, which gives such a rich history to this orphanage. It would actually be really cool if I wouldn't want to make sequels, I wouldn't want to reboot it, mm-hmm. but you know that Hollywood is eventually going to try something like that.
With their ways.
If they were to do something like this, it might be an interesting idea to look at the history of the orphanage in general. And look at it as being something that might have more stories to tell.
Possibly. But again, I feel like the orphanage, at least in this movie, seemed defined by that one incident.
Yeah.
Rather than something that, like, if it was like some sort of this beacon for weird shit happening, that's a whole nother thing.
That's a complete, yeah.
That's a different movie that you want to tell.
And that's kind of where it's like, because I like the setting so much and because I like the characters.
Right, yeah.
And you find out so much about these kids as the spirits, and then her becoming a spirit in the house, mm-hmm. as well. That's kind of where I'm interested in seeing, like, if other people were to discover this place down the road. Like, if
right,
they ended
yeah.
up doing a sequel without telling you it's a sequel to the orphanage, and you just kind of have to pick up on the fact that, hey, this place looks familiar. Wait a second.
Yeah.
And then realizing that she is now, like, the ghost at this place. But it seems like they're at peace at the end. So it doesn't seem like we
yeah,
would
no.
need a sequel.
That's the thing. Because what you're kind of making it into is, like, when Wreck 2 kind of turned out. When a movie sort of turns heel and kind
right.
of makes a twist on what you thought that the entire movie was about.
Right.
And kind of makes that whole thing. It doesn't ruin what came before, but it kind of sets a line in the sand of like, okay, this is what this movie was. This is what
yeah.
this movie is. And that sounds cool. But again, I feel like that would be too much of a shift for me
right.
to that kind of nicely wrapped in a bow story of what this
yeah.
is. That being said, the setting's magnificent. I would have loved to see more.
That's basically where it's
yeah.
like, I liked the environment so much. I liked the way that he was doing this type of story. To me, it is way better than a movie like the others. It's way better than The Sixth Sense. Like, it's that same type of ghost story, but just done with a deft hand. Like, he knows exactly what the hell he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no real wasted moments.
No, absolutely not.
That jumping 6 months was like...
You're like, how are you going to just come out from that? Oh, okay, wow.
Yeah.
Like, it's... Again, it's the type of trust that you want to put into a movie, and you're like, all right, I guess we're just going to forget about this?
Well, and the thing is, it's like, it's not like she could even find him with that secret door. You know, she didn't even know that thing was there.
Right, yeah.
So then being able to finally find out where that is and see where it is and then understand what actually happened in the situation, like, dude, that's heartbreaking.
It's
film is like... Yeah, it's a tragic fairy tale, man.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good.
Yeah.
But that is going to do it for us this week on mm-hmm. Oh the Horror. Be sure to check us out on our Libsyn page, and feel free to drop us a line on Twitter if you like, at Oh the Horror Cast on Twitter. Until next time, I'm Steve Ullman.
And I'm Rob Holmes.
We'll see you again.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
It is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.